search engine the words natural charcoal, you can find many outlets and better charcoals for the environment. Happy summer growing to all. I'm Weber Kuzma from KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Summer in America. Our contributors this week were part of Pacifica's Summer Radio Training Collective. They were Debbie Wildey from WERU in East Orland, Maine, Ellen McClure and Kathy Murillo from KCSB in Santa Barbara, California, and Jeff Humpfield and Weber Kuzma from KKFI in Kansas City, Missouri. If you're interested, you can also join our radio collective to learn more about radio production and how to contribute to Sprouts. Visit us online at pacificasproutsradio.collectivex.com. That's pacificasproutsradio.collectivex.com. Become a member and participate. You can also hear past editions of Sprouts and other Pacifica programming at www.pacifica.org. Sprouts is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. Production assistance came from Christine Black and Ursula Rudenberg in New York City. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. Music for today's show included selections from Louis Jordan, the Basel, Switzerland-based group Quella African Jazz, and Hungry March Band from their album Portable Soundtracks for Temporary Utopias. Visit them online at hungrymarchband.com. That's hungrymarchband.com. I'm Doug George at Pacifica Radio in New York City. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's, of course, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's the 6 to 8 Thursday evening show. We got local news and views and also some local blows from our SCPD at the Drum Circle yesterday. I'll be playing a lot of audio and talking about that. Stay tuned, and we're also hoping for a quick interview with Fred Geiger, local political activist, sometime landlord, and unabashed resident. Stay tuned.
Now some do say the farmer's best, but I do need say no. If it weren't for we poor labouring men, what would the farmer do? He would beat up all his old stuff until some new come in. Oh, there's never a trade in all England like we poor labouring men. Now some do say the butcher's best, but I do need say no. If it weren't for we poor labouring men, what would the butcher do? He would beat up all his old stuff until some new come in. Oh, there's never a trade in all England like we poor labouring men. Some do say the baker's best, but I do need say no. If it weren't for we poor labouring men, what would the baker do? He would beat up all his old stuff until some new come in. Oh, there's never a trade in all England like we poor labouring men. And now some do say the cobbler's best, but I do need say no. If it weren't for we poor labouring men, what would the cobbler do? He would beat up all his old stuff until some new come in. Oh, there's never a trade in all England like we poor labouring men. Let every true-born Englishman lift up a flowing glass, and toast each honest working man, likewise the working lass. And when these cruel days are gone, good times will come again, for there's never a trade in all England like we poor labouring men.
Yeah, that was Laboring Men by Roy Bailey. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm the Robe, Robert Norse, and this is your show and mine. You can call in if you'd like. 427-3772 is the phone number. Alternate number, 469-3119. Hopefully those numbers are working. Sometimes they are, and sometimes they don't seem to be working so well. But we'll see how it works today. A lot of the show is going to be taken up today with audio and discussion and possibly phone calls around the police actions destroying the public assembly or attempting to destroy the public assembly yesterday in the parking lot number 4 next to the farmers market, where for the last 10 years, every Wednesday afternoon, the drum circle has been a drumming and Food Not Bombs has often been a feeding. And folks have been hanging out and dancing and listening to the drumming and enjoying the sunshine, and we're going to be talking about that. But first, I suspect we may have an interview coming up with a local activist, a fulsome Fred Geiger, who's actually not very fulsome. He's pretty well-spoken. Let's see if this is him on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. It's Clive here. How are you doing?
Hey, Clive. You know, we also have an interview with you coming up. I didn't. You're going to give me a very brief summation, then I guess you're going to court tomorrow and coming back. I'm realizing that I suddenly have a conflict because I have somebody else calling in too. Do you want to call back like in about 20 minutes, or do you want to give a brief summary?
I'll tell you what, I'll swing by your studio in 20 minutes. How's that?
That sounds even better.
Excellent. I'll see you in about 20. Perfect.
Thank you. Clive is the $200,000 man. He actually had a $200,000 bail set on him when police seized him up at his home and seized his home at the same time about 2.5 weeks ago, and he'll be talking about that and his attempt to get that back, plus his children. It's quite a story, and we'll be talking with him about it. In a way, it's more of a story in terms of intensity and cost than what happened yesterday at the drum circle and parking lot number 4. But since the mayor, the city council, the city manager, whoever supposedly keeps these guys in uniform with guns and badges under control is in charge, or supposed to be in charge, that what happened yesterday at the farmers market really is probably more important to the average person in Santa Cruz than what's happening to Clive Bustrade. But it makes quite an intense story, and Clive is quite a fighter in his own right. We'll be talking with him in a few minutes. Hoping to hear again, as I said, from Fred Geiger. Fred is a guy who's been in local politics, or at least a supporter of various candidates, an activist around a number of environmental issues. I would say also a defender of civil rights for poor people. I believe he supported the civil rights of homeless people. I think he's been an opponent of the sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes homeless people at night, even though there is no legal place for homeless people to go, other than, I guess, now 60 to 80 spaces for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city limits. He's been involved in fighting the Seaside Company's land grab, or supporting the fight for the land grab, which the Seaside Company did out in the Tidelands area. For years, the Seaside Company has been making money hand over fist in its parking lot out there. He was involved in trying to, if I recall correctly, get increased affordable housing instead of the Fitzmaurice Byers plan. It's ironic. I think he'll be supporting those candidates probably in this upcoming election in the Dolphin Lee boondoggle. That's actually, they're called the Nueva Vista Project now. It's subsidized housing for some people and better subsidized housing than the Dolphin and Lee hotels and the other hotel across the street used to be. But all in all, less accommodations and more money being spent that could have been spent to build additional housing. We tried endlessly to try to get the council to respect that, I mean, appreciate that fact, and also to respect the rights of the residents who live there. And we had some success, but certainly not total success. So actually, you know, until I get a call from Uncle Fred, as I like to call my callers, even if they don't have any nieces or nephews, and they're certainly not my uncle in that sense, I'm going to turn to the farmer's market and tapes I made yesterday. Actually, some of them actually in the farmer's market and some of them next to the farmer's market at the parking lot number 4, where last week the Trash Orchestra, the Raging Grannies, Food Not Bombs, Independent Caterer Joe Schultz, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, other community people got together to support the drummers in taking back the public space that suddenly was fenced off with green mesh fence, and then the fences just sort of disappeared and were taken down by the people whose taxpayer dollars supported the police department that was standing around kind of directing people the week before to leave, but kind of left with nothing to do other than stand around and try to look ferocious and intimidating. And, of course, they were less ferocious and intimidating in the presence of dozens or scores of people who came to support the drummers and the drummers themselves who came back under the lead of the Trash Orchestra. That was the scene a week ago. And this week, the same fences were up again. We join me looking over that scene and describing it on this tape, and you'll catch a few interviews, and we'll begin with those interviews. If you have any commentary, feel free to call in 427-3772. I'll try to accommodate you at an appropriate point, and we can talk about what should be done next to restore public space in Santa Cruz.
It's September
17th, 2008, about 15 to 1, downtown in parking lot number 4, the lot adjacent to the Wednesday Farmers Market, which is just beginning to start getting set up. The vehicles are arriving. Looks like, I think it was Sergeant Harms just drove by in his vehicle. The green wire mesh, or the green mesh is up that surrounds the three, well, I should call them actually five trees, two in the center that are usually where the drummers drum, one near the sidewalk and one over near the trash can. And I interrupt this interesting introduction to have an even more interesting speaker on the line with me is the aforementioned Fred Geiger. Hi, Fred.
By golly, it is me, Robert. How you doing?
And, Fred, I've described you as, of course, a disgruntled landlord and a namby-pamby liberal.
Okay.
Actually, not really, but you're actually a man who's been around Santa Cruz for how many years?
An awful long time. It's about 35 now.
Wow. And you are you're a property owner.
I am.
You are, in fact, you are a landlord.
I do that.
And you're a man who used to attend city council meetings regularly, but hasn't been seen there much recently.
Discouraged.
you've been discouraged by the Coonerty Council, the Riley Council, the Rotkin Council, or possibly the Matthews Council?
I've been discouraged by just about every council.
I see. Well, the current lineup of candidates includes five former mayors or council members, including Madrigal, Byers, Lane, Coonerty, and Fitzmaurice. So are you encouraged or discouraged?
Well, some I'm mildly encouraged and some I'm heavily discouraged.
And I guess, you know, I will probably disagree with you on some of these issues, but I know that you are quite the expert, or certainly you seem to be more knowledgeable than I, on, for example, labor issues and environmental issues and how the at least some of the council candidates stack up, not so much in terms of what they say they're going to do, but what they have done and what, in your view, they're likely to do. Because you sometimes, I know you sat on the inner councils of some council members in the past, like council members Sugar and perhaps Fitzmaurice and Crone, right, when they were in the ascendance, well, they weren't really in the ascendance, when they came into power of a sort. Back
the inner councils of the councils, huh?
You were in the inner councils,
the
yes.
Councils,
from which others like Scott Graham and Phil Baer were excluded, you and were allowed in, correct?
You could even blame me a little bit for some of that. I talked to Phil Baer and Scott Graham at one time and explained to them my view of the situation and that we were trying to have a conversation with some of these people that we had all supported for council that wasn't getting to be too confrontational or loud at that time. And I think they graciously realized that they had an emotional commitment to certain issues that would not allow them to operate within that framework, and they disinvited themselves.
Hmm.
Which I have to admire them for, because they were really trying to hope for the best with working with the council members and, you know, not to getting
just
aggravated.
Don't try that one with me. That's my advice.
But, yeah, that's not your style. Yeah, you would have probably been asked to disinvite yourself.
Yes, well, I'm sure that actually, I have been asked to disinvite myself, and sometimes I do, but usually I find that, you know, it hurts my ego, so how can I, you know, my ego is, of course, the most important thing.
Yeah, well, let's talk about if it's, you know, where you're headed with this, you know, about the future and current political situation.
Right, what are the big issues coming up in this election, you think, and what are the differences in the candidates on those issues?
Well, I think that what I've heard from a couple of the, particularly next candidates, is basically they seem to have this trickle-down vision where if we just build lots of jobs, everything will be okay. I've heard both Ryan Coonerty and David Terrazas basically say that. They've said, you know, we have this carbon footprint that extends all the way over the hill, to quote them, because of the jobs that people are driving to over the hill. So therefore, if we could just create enough jobs here, we will eliminate that carbon footprint, according to them. I'm not exactly clear, and I'm pretty sure they're not either, on how we're going to make sure that only people who are currently driving over the hill get these jobs and therefore no longer drive over the hill. That seems to me sort of typical of their wishy-washy thinking. You know, here's something that sounds wonderful. We'll put some greenwash on it, and we'll sell it to the public, and everyone will think it's just wonderful.
And so the point is you want to create a lot of non-union jobs. Is that the idea?
I don't think they have any particular affinity for unions, that's for sure.
Of course, do any of the council candidates? I understand Madrigal, for example, has repeatedly voted, you know, for projects that don't involve ultimate use of union labor, right?
As far as I know, Tony's been quite good on union issues. The unions are solidly behind them. They also endorsed Tim Fitzmaurice, and Catherine Byers was out of town during the union endorsement.
Well, I'm not really talking about who they endorsed, though I'm interested in that. I'm interested in, you look at the actual projects and the wording of, you know, some of the projects get built with union labor, but they're not required to use union labor, even though, I guess, other cities that is the case in terms of the deals the city has. I understand Madrigal, and in fact, not just to single him out, but other members of the council, too, went along with these non-union deals. Is that inaccurate?
Well, I don't know which particular ones we're talking about
here. Okay, well, let's let that pass, because it actually is a pot shot from Scott Graham that he put in my armament,
okay,
suggesting that Madrigal, just like the rest, were essentially, you know, I know that Madrigal got a lot of criticism for his management of his own union in terms of he was a, and I know that I've criticized him endlessly on the Citizens Police Review Board, but I also know that I tend to criticize people who are sort of mild left, because I regard them with more hostility than perhaps, you know, would be justified in terms of balancing out.
Yeah.
And we have others who are worse.
It's the crushing disappointment of dashed expectations, I think we're talking about.
Well,
here, right?
People who make commitments and don't keep them, I tend to get annoyed with. People who I know aren't going to keep their commitments and never make them,
right.
I'm a little more patient with Coonerty, you know, is horrible, but you know he's horrible. You know, I mean,
well,
Madrigal pretends
horrible,
not to be.
Though. he's claiming to be a progressive still after 4 years of demonstrating through his voting record and the things.
And the ACLU believes him, apparently. They gave him an award, right?
Yeah.
The Hammer of Justice.
Sure. Great. He's a champion of freedom of speech and political demonstration and all that, I'm sure. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I'm not too active in the ACLU. I don't know what they're thinking, but, it's kind of hard to imagine. But, I see Coonerty and Shiraz as having this greenwashing tendency that they're smart, they're young, they know what sells in Santa Cruz, and what they're trying to sell us is overdevelopment and trickle-down theory packaged in a nice greenwash cover. The 2120 Delaware project, I think, was a good example of that. This was a project that was supposed to bring the green building and business incubator to Santa Cruz and have people living on site. Well, that sounds really wonderful. The mayor, although admitted when he was confronted by a reporter that it was probably going to cost the city money, but he supported it anyway, and there were no financial studies as to what the impact would be. They didn't want any financial studies. Likely they didn't want to know what the results were going to be. This project was not required, to my knowledge, to do anything green as far as beyond the Santa Cruz City Building Code, except for the developer offered to run a couple of wires up to the roof, so if they put in solar, they would have some of the wires already in, which is, very minimal. They also didn't want to talk about the 5,000 cars a day that this project would bring into a mostly residential neighborhood. That doesn't sound very green to me, 5,000 cars a day. And then, of course, there was no requirements or even inducements to make sure the employees that were supposedly going to be living on site actually did end up living on site. So it's, when you paint this brilliant green picture.
I'm sorry, that employees didn't end up with what?
Well, see, this was supposed to be like a live-work project, and that was one of the green things about it. But there are no requirements or even incentives in the development conditions set up by the city of Santa Cruz that would induce people or allow or compel people to actually live on site. So
sort of a little like the Fitzmaurice Crone Sugar buyers ducking of the Dolphin League guarantees back around 2000.
Well, you can say that if you want.
I kind of did at the time.
It's a long stretch, perhaps. But
is it really?
I know you were talking about the Dolphin League earlier, and there was issues there, like there is with, I think, the
guarantees that since they're being removed, that they'd be able to go back, that there'd be ironclad guarantees instead of some hokey first preference stuff.
I think we were somewhat, like you said, successful in that. Rather than just being basically kicked out, and the people were given an option of taking a buyout or actually being able to return
$5,000 and get out of town. Well, that's
if they chose that. The apartments down there at the river that are going up in the old tannery now are, who knows who's going to live in those? They're supposed to be artists, but from what I've heard, it's going to be federal. The federal government's not going to say, okay, we can just let Chip and a few of his buddies here in the art community decide who's worthy to live there. It's going to be opened up to the community, the Bay Area community as a whole, and it's going to probably bring hundreds of people into Santa Cruz to live in these, subsidized housing things that were subsidized by the Santa Cruz Redevelopment Fund. So I'm not sure how that's going to benefit us. And then it also appears that the performance venues that were part of this package have somehow now faded out of the package. And now that this nonprofit developers come in with all this housing, which will be obviously quite a nice cash flow, somehow these performance venues now are not appearing, and now they seem to be a separate project, and it seems like we're going to have to raise money separately through these performance organizations or through the general public to provide the other part of the project that we were promised. And,
sounds a little like what I've heard described as the sell-off of the Del Mar, the city subsidizing of the Del Mar to, what was it? Was it Swenson? I'm not sure.
George Al was the partner.
George Al.
And I think he was carrying the financing at a nice
and the city
rate.
Gets a couple of, a few days a year, but they get to pay for all the benefits for the private owner. I don't know. I mean, does this happen? Go ahead.
Our council doesn't have a very happy record of dealing with developers. They get hornswoggled just about every time. I mean,
yet you think that some of the candidates have better records than others?
Perhaps. I think also that all the council members need to remember that when you're dealing with a developer, it's a poker game, and you don't have to accept, the first thing the person says. You can call a bluff. You can say, let's deal another hand. Let's have a couple more cards here. Our council seems to feel like here's what the developer says they want, and it's either yes or no. And there's no negotiation. Now we're finding out with the La Bahia situation that, well, maybe there is some negotiation here now that the developer's starting to realize he has problems with the community, with the unions, with the Coastal Commission, with preservationists, with environmentalists, you know, and maybe that he actually getting four votes at the council isn't really the only thing you need to do something major in Santa Cruz if there's a lot of opposition to it.
What about issues that really impact low-income people, like, let's say, rent control, community control of police, ordinances are used selectively by the police to harass?
Community control of police? You must be confused, Robert. You have it backwards there, don't you?
All right. I probably do, yes. But how do we reverse that equation?
Yeah. Police control of the community. Right?
Well, that's how it should be, of course.
Sure.
Or that's how it is, I should say.
You just join the police department.
I guess, but aren't all the positions filled? And they finally got all their positions filled. They got a full component of guys with guns.
Well,
no,
we don't have
guns.
Any money.
Well, I don't know. I think the money is heading in that direction. I mean, do the candidates have any differences on these issues that you think are significant?
You know, I haven't heard anybody talk too much about that. I was not happy with the over-generous pensions that the city granted to the police. And we were always told, well, if we want a stronger police review board, we have to be able to give them something. And then all of a sudden one day we gave them a fabulous pension package, and we didn't even ask, as far as I know, for anything in return, which I think was a huge mistake.
Police Review Board, of course, was decapitated.
I think we could have used this if we were going to spend this money.
Fitzmaurice voting to decapitate it, by the way. I hope you're aware of that.
I don't know.
Check it out.
I would support a stronger police review, or a civilian police review board, I think is a good idea. And, maybe some of these issues that are developing now around the loitering in public and beating on drums and whatnot, outrages.
It has to be said that I believe Fitzmaurice voted against what I call the parking lot panic law, which is one of the main laws that police threaten people with but haven't really cited them much for at the drum circles, the attempt to extinguish the drum circle that the police were doing.
Well, you know, I think that you have to give Tim more credit than most people. Like you said,
Tim
you might not be happy with anybody, but Tim Fitzmaurice. But I think you have to say, well, at least he's done better than most of the rest of them. I mean, maybe it's not as far as you or whoever would like, but I would probably agree with you. I'd like to see things move a little further.
Well, all I'm going to say is that he did vote against that particular proposal. He has spoken, as well as of all the other candidates, against Coonerty's cutoff of debate at city council and the shortening of oral communication. People have not been very specific about how Coonerty is, and Rotkin before him, have manipulated a number of council rules to make it very difficult to respond. In fact, not really worthwhile. Maybe that's one of the reasons you don't make it to city council so much. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that they don't really have a dedication to the public process, these people who are obstructing the public input. Maybe it's a little obnoxious. Maybe, you know, a couple of sort of burned out people get up there on a routine basis and speak. But, and this is Santa Cruz. Actually, some people think that that's part of the character of Santa Cruz. It makes us a little interesting, a little quirky. But trying to limit democracy and limit public input, I don't think is what people get elected for. They get elected for the opposite. They get elected to represent people, and to represent them, they have to listen to them. By not listening to them, they're sort of saying, well, you elected me, and I'm going to be a little dictator for 4 years, and then if you don't like it, then you can get rid of me after the 4 years. Yeah.
I did see Council Member Porter show up kind of after the fact, to my mind, pompously strutting about the parking lot. Of course, he's not running for office.
Mm-hmm.
And he did say a word or two about this and that, although no council member, and Madrigal, I guess they called him up and asked him, you know, what he thought, and instead of saying, why is half the police force out in a block, you know, to arrest two people, one of them, you know, for serving food and maybe clipping a plastic fence, although I don't know even if that's what they did. Actually, he wasn't even arrested for that. He was arrested for resisting arrest, Jack, the Food Not Bombs guy, yesterday. And the other one for drumming in protest as the guy was being arrested. That's Wes Modes, who's in jail on $15,000 bail. None of your valued council members have said a peep about this in terms of any kind of protest, or more broadly about the issue of the importance of restoring public assembly. Fitzmaurice may have voted against it, but I haven't heard any kind of strong statements from him that he'll vote to remove the law. I haven't seen him there supporting anything of that sort. Is this the kind of guy you want to see in office?
Well, I mean, you know, what do you expect him to do as far as being down there? What really counts as a council member is how they vote, like you said. I mean, you know, they can come out and make a public statement. That's fine. But really what the basic power they have is to take a position and vote.
They can leave the community. Those who are regarded as pariahs, and I'm not naming any names here, whose opinions are regarded as beyond the pale, can become you know, more respectable because they are respectable, but if individuals who are in positions of responsibility take them up, even if they don't win the vote. The idea seemed to be on the city council that unless you have the four votes, and that was always the deal with Fitzmaurice. Actually, it wasn't Fitzmaurice. It was Sugar and Crone, who were more liberal than Fitzmaurice on issues that are important to me, like the sleeping ban. Fitzmaurice was the one who immediately ran to the other side of the aisle and voted essentially to keep the current sleeping ban in force and the current anti-homeless laws in force. And, in fact, I think he went along with making them worse, generally speaking. I mean, he's voted for permit parking. He's voted for all these things that are, you know, ostensibly or actually explicitly anti-homeless laws.
I think he's actually been the one who turned around the most. I felt like there was a low point there when a bunch of these people you're talking about, were intimidated or beaten down or sucked into the system, whatever. And I felt like one reason I'm supporting him now is I feel like he made a turnaround there. I remember him saying to Mike Rotkin one time, I think it was about not letting Mr. Tomasi speak or something, where they were trying to manipulate the rules so he wouldn't have a chance. And I think it was limiting people commenting on more than so many items on the consent agenda. I liked his quote. He's, you know, sort of a quotable guy being an English teacher, I guess. He told Mike Rotkin, you know, Mike, sometimes democracy is not the most efficient way, but nevertheless, even though it has its price, I still support it. So yeah, that's the kind of statement that I like that he made. Of course, you know, that's just a statement, but I think it sort of reflects on
what should we hope for from our I guess two questions for you. We're talking with Fred Geiger here. I don't think there's a way to get people to call in because the other line is but maybe
I promise not to hog too much of your show, Robert, because I got to eat dinner and go to a meeting in a couple of
You're not hogging
minutes,
it,
anyway.
But I'd love to have you back, Fred. And I'm not giving you a lot of opportunity to go into the details, but I probably should be. Let me give you a few minutes to talk about not the candidates you support, but the issues you think are important in the upcoming election and why people should even bother to vote for any of these council candidates.
Well, I think you're hitting on some important issues. There's many other ones, but one of the issues is, I think, civil liberties, and it seems like there's some kind of a resurgence with maybe the right wing or the police department or something to try to tamp down on, you know, on these people's civil liberties. I mean, obviously, they can make rules about people doing certain things in public, but when it gets into the realm of being a political protest, then that's a whole different and protected behavior. So you can say you can't come into this area, but if people are coming into this area, let's say an area at the farmer's market, if they're doing it as a political protest, just like with the downtown ordinances, the city eventually and cleverly at kind of quiet time repealed the, you know, political protest in the public, if it's not obstructing legitimate right-of-way, is a protected activity. And I think that's very important to continue to establish, and I appreciate these guys like
What does that do with the political candidates? I mean, you and I agree on these issues, but we're talking about people which I assume you're contributing money to their campaigns, you're putting up their signs on your yard, you're speaking on their behalf. Why should anybody bother to vote for the candidates you want? I mean, I assume you're supporting certain candidates, right?
I am supporting four candidates. Actually, I'm including Blas Cabrera because I'm pretty impressed with this young first-timer guy, and I don't expect him to get elected this time, but hopefully in
that's
the future.
Jacob Blas Cabrera.
Right, yeah, he seems like a good progressive guy with a good head on his shoulders, and hopefully he'll be around.
And the other three are three old-time recycled hacks. I'm sorry,
hey,
three former mayors, two mayors and a council member, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about Tim Fitzmaurice, Catherine Byers, and Tony Madrigal. Yeah, I think all of them would be interested in this, you know, political expression issue in public, and I'm hoping when and if they do get on the council, that, you know, that'll become an issue.
I haven't heard them say anything about it. Maybe they're just keeping a strong silent pose.
Well, that wasn't actually. I think Tim mentioned something. There was one question in the recent candidates forum, and Tim did mention something that he had a respect and a concern about, you know, this aspect of political free speech and all that. This issue has sort of just evolved, you know, very recently. So
I don't know. It seems something like it's been around for quite a while.
Well, the general issue, I mean, as far as the drummers issue, the farmers market issue, which has sort of stirred this whole thing up again, which I'm glad. I mean, I feel bad for for, you know, someone who's in jail and this and that. But I'm glad that the issue is coming back to the forefront because I think it needs to be resolved.
You'll be down there next Wednesday supporting.
I was actually down there Wednesday before last. Yeah,
good for you.
And I didn't make
you,
it last Wednesday. I can't remember where I was.
And perhaps you were one of the people that persuaded the police to stop harassing people and let the drummers finish their drumming. Although we were able successfully on two Wednesdays to support the drum circle at the cost of course, two people kidnapped and being held for ransom. In the jail, which one of them has been released over.
Yeah, I hope there'll be a upswelling of people to come down there. I'm going to be down there probably handing out political literature, but also just down there to support the kind of right of political free speech in public places. And I hope a lot of other people will come down there. And
well, make sure you don't, stand in the parking lot for more than 14 minutes.
Well, you know, I feel like if I'm down there distributing political literature, that's political free speech, and I have a right to be down there as long as I want.
Time, place, and manner. It's a parking lot. It's not meant for politics.
I hope you'll be down there taking pictures in case I need some backup evidence, Robert.
Hey, I'll try to be there.
Hey, going to eat, and good talking with you.
Hey, thank you, Fred. We're talking with Fred Geiger. Call again, Fred, because I know we've only touched very superficially on these issues.
See you Wednesday.
All right, then.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772-469-3119. 427-3772-469-3119. That was Fred Geiger. We're talking about the upcoming political lack of selection that we're going to have in the city council candidate race. There are 10 candidates. 5 of them are former council members, 3 of which he supports, Lane, Byers, and Madrigal, 2 of which he doesn't. Byers, Madrigal, and Fitzmaurice. Lane and Coonerty does not support. And there are 5 newcomers, Teresa's a well-funded conservative, and then Lisa Molyneux, Jacob Cabrera, Craig Canada, and Simba Kenyatta. Cabrera has agreed to come on the show. Canada has occasionally come in the past. And as always, anyone's always welcome to call in to talk about these candidates, particularly on the issues that concern me, which have to do with restoring the right to use public spaces, restoring the rights of poor people to engage in the kind of survival activities they need to, like sleeping not everywhere and anywhere, but somewhere, as I have to say as a soundbite, but it certainly is true, however soundbitey it is. Let's get back to some of the drum circle discussion. Again, you're hearing me about an hour and a half before the drummers usually arrive. They usually arrive around 3 or 3:30. And I'm kind of scouting out the area, and I find these green mesh fences around the 3 treed areas where people, 3 areas of trees where people usually sit down or drum and hang out, eat food, have been meshed off and are no longer accessible to the public. And I understand this actually happened twice in the previous 48 hours. It happened when the fences were originally put up yesterday morning, and then it happened then, of course, when the crowd came later yesterday and took back the space, again, the fences went down. And here's some more discussion from your favorite commentator.
But they're certainly up now. Sergeant Harms, or whoever the officer was in his vehicle, drove into the car almost to meet me. But I took a few photos and continued about my business. Well, I'm downtown here next to Cafe Campesino talking with
Cameron.
And Cameron, you have your guitar with you, your backpack, and I think you had your guitar either yesterday or the day before when I saw you on a bench up by Cathcart and Pacific about a block away.
Correct.
There's a group of people there with you.
Correct.
And I also saw 2 hosts walking away, and then a moment later I saw all of you packing up. What was that all about?
The 2 hosts that came up to me and a friend of mine, Colin, he had his dog on the avenue, and they threatened to call the cops if he didn't remove his dog from the avenue.
And so it was all about the dog and not about your being at the bench with a guitar or anything like that?
Yeah, pretty much it was all about the dog. Even though you know deep down inside they don't want us even anywhere near Pacific Avenue.
So they didn't say move along, they just said get the dog off the avenue.
Correct.
Okay, I want to be fair to the hosts. Unpleasant as I may find the concept.
Correct.
We've been talking with
Cameron.
Hey, Cameron, you planning to come to the drum circle today?
I'll be there.
And have you done any drumming in the last week or played much guitar?
Oh, yeah, both.
Where is your main locus of playing?
Here on the Avenue, actually. The Avenue or Laurel Park.
And how have police and other passersby been treating you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. The money's bad in Santa Cruz, but other than that, not too bad.
So no hassles, no move-alongs, no camping tickets?
I have a few camping tickets, yeah.
From the last week or from earlier times?
From earlier times.
And
I also have a ticket for panhandling in a group of two or more.
And tell me about that.
Just sitting on the avenue with more than one person, and the rule is you can't be within three squares of another person while you make your money. And I was two squares away from somebody, so they gave me a ticket.
You mean the name of the officer who gave you the ticket?
Yeah, Winston.
And when was this?
That was about 4 months ago.
Have you seen Officer Winston? I know he was accused by at least one individual of brutality.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I was actually sitting on the bench right across the street over there, and they came up to ask PB to talk. You were there that night. They came up to talk to PB about
PBJ.
Yeah, they were surrounding him, kind of looking for a reason to stop and like get in his face. And they finally,
What was he doing when they broke?
He walked out in the street, so that's how they got to talk to him, because he walked out in the street. I guess whatever he did.
Did he block traffic or?
No. They just used that as a reason to sit him down, and he stood up. At first, he was sitting down and talking to them calmly, and then he stood up to talk, and they instantly took that as him resisting arrest, slammed his face into the concrete, put him in cuffs, picked him back up, and then slammed him into the concrete again.
Now, was this Officer Winston or Sergeant Lamaze?
It was both, and like two other. It was like four cops.
How close were you to this?
I was right there, and they were right there, so I would say...
You're pointing to across the street by the Cold Stone Creamery, and the incident happened, what, on the other side of this Cafe Campesino?
Correct.
Toward the where the main eating area is.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what else did you see?
That's about it. After that, another kid came up. Adam came up, and he was like, be late on PB, leave him alone. And he starts walking away, and Winston runs after the Adam kid, which is like, I think that kid's under 18. He's a minor, and grabbed him, put him in cuffs, and threw him in jail. Didn't charge him with anything, which is illegal, and just let him out 3 hours later.
You're allowed to arrest people and take them to jail. Claiming you're charging them with drunk in public and then drop the charge and let them out, that's something that police frequently do, so it's possible they did that.
Yeah, correct, yeah.
What a loophole.
Yeah.
Did you see this as well or not?
I did.
What's your name?
My name is Robert.
And Robert, what part of it did you see? Did you see anything different or anything more?
Oh, I witnessed the whole occasion, and, everything that
Officer
camera
Winston
said.
Taking down PB&J, you just saw him...
I witnessed Officer Winston take down another gentleman the other night, just right here where we're standing.
Now, the incident with PB&J happened, 2 weeks ago, more or less, but on a Saturday evening?
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago.
And I had an incident also on the 4th of July.
4th of July. Well, tell me about that.
What I did was, I was drunk. It was 4th of July. I wasn't creating a scene or anything of that sort, but when Winston was harassing somebody, I said, leave those guys alone, and he instantly came over to me.
What was he doing to the people, and where did this happen?
This was right by 1010 Pacific.
By where?
1010 Pacific.
And what was Winston doing?
He was harassing some people for sitting on a bench. I guess they had their backpacks all sitting out, obstructing the walkway or something. And what I said to him was, stop harassing people.
Right.
And he came right over to me instantly. He said, you're drunk. I said, yeah, a little bit. He said, get off the avenue. So what he did was escort me up to Front Street. At that time I got up to Front Street, I remembered that I also had, some of my property locked up down here. It was my bicycle. So I came right back down to pick up my bicycle to take it elsewhere. He sees me down here and instantly throws handcuffs on me. So, which is understandable. I was agreeing with that part. But the part I didn't like was that when he took me to the police department and got me out of the police car, he opened up the door first. I stuck my foot out. And then he slammed the door on my foot and said, straight to me, he said to me, you're not, he said, I didn't tell you to get out of the car. That's what he said. It's just straight words. I didn't
tell you. Injure your foot?
Yeah, he injured my foot. There's
which
a
foot?
Hospital report on it, too. My left foot.
And what kind of injury did you sustain?
It was just the only way they could really get in depth with it was with an MRI. But they did do x-rays like that, and they said it was just, maybe a sprain or some sort of that.
How is it now?
Oh, it's fine. But I asked the police officers at the police department that night if I could be could have them call an ambulance for me. They wouldn't do it. So I actually had to hobble my way to an outlet to plug in my cell phone and call 911 myself.
And who paid for the ambulance trip eventually?
To be honest with you, I have health insurance. So ultimately, you know, I was just released. They put a brace on my foot. Mm-hmm. And
Did you complain about Officer Winston's behavior to a superior?
At the police department, or at the jail,
so, yeah.
I should say.
Stand him that way when you see
yeah. I made comments on everything of it, and they just seemed too busy, like they didn't care, wouldn't want to deal with anything of that sort. So.
Have you seen anything since the incident with PBJ?
Yes, I have.
What have you seen?
I saw Officer Winston come up to John, another gentleman out here. Just go right up to him because he's had problems with him in the past, and he was drunk. I saw Officer Winston put the handcuffs on him, but he was searching him. And I could see, because I was 2 feet away from this whole thing going down, and John asked me to take his bicycle for him because he was going to jail, and I said, not a problem. But Officer Winston was putting all of his weight on the handcuffs
right.
while he was reaching in front to reach and grab his pockets to search, which was, you could see the strain on his hands and the look in his face that he was putting a lot of pressure on it, and John was complaining. He's like, if you want to put me on the ground, please put me on the ground. He's like, please put me on the ground. And he started getting loud, and then what Officer Winston did was grab him around the throat and backdrop him right onto the concrete, and John hit his head on the concrete. And
where was this?
This was right here where we were
standing. We're standing right in front of Jade and Cafe Campesino. And when was this? About what time?
This was a week ago at about 11 o'clock at night.
It was
right after Labor Day had ended, and there was too many police officers on the force, and, you know, they kept harassing everybody on the strip. It was that big occurrence, I think, right after PBJ, a week after PBJ, and, you know, they'd just been harassing us, coming through here consistently, move on, you're loitering. You know, if I was in a business suit and I'm having a conversation with a group of people, police officer won't even come near us, okay? But a police officer has the right to come up to us because of the way we look in a conversation and observe the whole time. Now, if I was a businessman and said, excuse me, officer, could you move on? He more than likely would, but if we said that to him, we would probably go to jail. That's pretty much the way they run their force down.
Gruffy types aren't wanted around here. You know that, don't you?
True.
You want to give your full name?
I'd prefer not to.
Okay. You going to be around? Because
I'm trying to start my own business.
Indeed. Well, you know, Officer Winston has been accused by Billy, also known as Corey, of kicking him in the face. Billy's credibility has been criticized by at least one other person. What's your feeling about his credibility?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not really too familiar with him. So.
But does Officer Winston seem like the kind of cop who would kick someone in the face?
Well, he did that to my foot. Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't mention also that when that did happen, and he was searching me, he said, spread your legs. I said, as a smart ass, I said, they're wide enough for what you need to do. And he kicked me in the back of the knee also. But I didn't mention any of that in any of the reports at the hospital. It was just my foot because my foot hurt me. But, yeah, I had a bruise from about a foot long from the back of my my leg to the bottom of my calf. It was black and blue and purple and green.
Have you seen Officer Winston recently on the mall?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when was the last time you saw him here?
Right before I went, last Tuesday.
Yeah. Today
was at a festival up there.
Today is Wednesday. So you mean yesterday? Or
no, last a week ago.
So it's been about a week. You just get back into town? Or?
Yeah, last night I got back. I was at a music festival up in Laytonville.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
It was great coming to the drum circle today.
Absolutely. I was a little upset that it got shut down the week before I went up.
So it was open last week, thanks to the community, as you know.
Yes, I agree. I need that. That's something, I mean, I remember there was one other incident. I also remember that there was one January 8th or February 8th where they shut it down before.
Oh, they tried actually in January and December on three different days they were able to shut it down, but the community again responded by coming down there and saying, we want this to be open. Police backed off. What's your prediction about what's going to happen today?
I think it'll be fine.
Fences are up, you know.
Fences are up, but hey, put it to you this way. This has been going on for such a long time. It brings the community together. It's a gathering. Nobody's doing anything. We're not beating people up. It's just...
It's obnoxious drumming that upsets the farmers market people.
Why? If we're loitering, so are they. But they're even selling stuff.
So they have a lease. They've leased the property. They're paying money. They're providing a valuable service. What are you doing?
Well, if we need to do that, then we can make that happen.
Go get yourself a permit. Why are you just suddenly showing up and allowing yourself to use a parking lot that's intended for vehicles and bicycles, not for human beings?
Well, because it's been fit there for a long time. And if they can do it across the street at the Red Church the same day that we can do it over in the parking lot, what makes it any different?
The parking lot is not for vehicles. Why don't you go across to the Red Church, as Sergeant Harms has always suggested?
That's shady. We have a nice shaded spot. Don't be able to sit on wet grass.
We've been talking with
Robert.
Thanks, Robert. Well, it's about 2 o'clock on Pacific Avenue after a quick video walk through the side of the drum circle in an hour, if the drummers show up and if the drumming happens, because the area is fenced off. I'm in front of the Del Mar Theater talking with
Jason.
And Jason, you have a sign, food please. You're sitting in a lotus position and munching, what do you call it, kernel corn, kettle, what do you call this?
Candy corn.
Candy corn. It's not kettle corn, it's not whatever, corn nuts. So you say that you have had a few encounters with the police?
Yeah.
Recently?
Yeah.
What happened?
About a week ago, I was walking by a group of my friends when a group of policemen showed up. I guess they got a complaint from one of the businesses for being out there. And
where were you?
Right from the taqueria.
Taqueria Vallarta?
Yeah.
On the corner.
Yes. And the police were there as I was walking by, and I stopped and asked my friend what was going on. And the woman cop, I think her name is Laura, asked me what my name was and to have a seat. So I sat down, and she started asking me all these questions. She pulled out a piece of paper.
Did you ask if you had the right? Did you just say, am I free to go?
I did not say that.
It's always something you can always say.
I asked her why she was asking me all these questions. She said, well, I haven't seen you down here before, so I just want to get to know you.
Get a little file on you, in other words.
Yeah, basically. So she pulled out a flyer or whatever and asked me if I had any tattoos, where I lived, if I had a job, all these personal questions. No.
All right. Sergeant Harms is making sure you're not being hassled by intrepid reporters.
It was actually during that time that I met him, when I was being hassled during that point. And there was a group of them around me, actually. It was pretty intimidating.
How many police were involved?
Three.
So the female officer's name was?
I think her first name was Laura. I don't remember her last name.
Sergeant Harms involved?
Yeah.
And they told you to sit down because they wanted to get a file on you, determine if you had tattoos, et cetera, et cetera. Are you a criminal? Are you a guy on the run? Any outstanding warrants?
No, I've never been arrested in my life.
Okay. How long have you been in town?
Since April.
And what kind of work do you do? What's your job? Why are you bumming around?
I don't have a specific job. I create jewelry. I live life. I don't feel the need to go to work every day to define myself as a human being.
You crazy hippie type, you. So you say, what happened? Let's continue with the story. You were told to sit down and chat, give your life story to, or give your stats to Laura, the police officer.
Basically, and then she started talking to somebody else, and then I started talking to Sergeant Harms, and I asked him, well...
Hold it. I wonder what Sergeant Harms is doing over here, speaking of Sergeant Harms. So go ahead. What did Sergeant Harms say?
Well, I was just talking to him. He didn't understand how I didn't have a job or need money or this or that. And I explained to them, you know, I was a college graduate. I did have a career, and I chose this life, and it's very hard for them to understand. But I kept trying to explain, I was just walking by. Why am I sitting here talking to you?
Right.
You know, I don't want to be here. And he said, the other cop was talking to someone else, and he said, well, I don't know if she's finished with you, so, you know, just chill out for a second.
He told you to stay further.
Yeah.
Sergeant Harms did that.
Yeah.
Sergeant Harms. Go ahead.
But, other than that, after a while, I was free to leave, but... You know, it was intimidating and didn't want to talk to them, but I felt like I had to and present my ID for no reason. I just walked by.
Did they demand ID from
you? Yes.
Did you show ID?
Yes.
You aren't required to show ID, and you aren't required to identify yourself, actually.
I didn't want to cause any situation where I might have been arrested.
Of course. But I'm sure Sergeant Harms, who I will call over to advise you of your rights, will tell you that you do not have to talk to police officers unless they are telling you you are detained or under arrest.
Yeah, I asked if I was detained.
Who said?
I didn't ask him. I asked the other cop. He says, oh.
And even then, you don't have to talk to a police officer. In fact, the best thing to do is to say, if you're under arrest, say, well, I have nothing to say. I'd like to speak to an attorney. I don't consent to a search. And then cooperate with what the police officer wants to do, but just don't say anything. In the studio with me, I have Clive Bustrade. Clive, it looks like you've been pretty busy on your computer there. You called in earlier. I call you the $200,000 man because you recently were jailed on $200,000 bail. Is that correct?
That's correct, Robert. That is indeed correct. And that was probably the... That's correct, Robert. And that's probably the lightest issue of what happened to me weekend before last.
And I want to hear about that, but I'm kind of going to finish up this interview that we're listening to on tape. Perhaps you can listen to it, and it may seem rather trivial compared to your troubles. Your children are at stake, your house, your liberty, and I guess from your perspective, corruption, profound corruption in the American system of justice, the local police, and judiciary.
Extraordinarily corrupt. You know, Robert, this little Santa Cruz town has a judiciary, a sheriff's, and a district attorney's office, which compares easily with Nazi Germany under Hitler, or probably worse, actually, than some of the instances of Soviet Russia under Stalin, because I know those people. In fact, a lot of those people who compared Santa Cruz and situations they've seen in Santa Cruz to what they experienced under Stalin and have indicated that we're living in Santa Cruz in an era which is really on a par or worse than Nazi Germany or Stalin's Russia.
Well, it's interesting. You know, most people would regard that, of course, as laughable, and they would say a new associate of mine has said, if you ever use the word Nazi, you've immediately lost the argument, because that's a way of trying to beg the question and pull out the biggest demon you can find. But you, on the other hand, you worked in one of the former Soviet republics setting up some sort of telecommunications system?
We're putting up satellites, but of course, the issue one wants to always look at in regard to bringing such an allegation is the facts and the statistics which we have today with respect to Department of Justice official statistics that more than 7 million Americans are in jail, prison, or on probation is easily on a par with Stalin's Russia. So the facts back that up, and the facts actually are speaking louder.
Well, but it is true
opinions.
That Stalin's Russia and Nazi Germany were even more notorious for mass murder, and that as
I want to
Jews, socialists, Nazis, mental patients, gays. In the case of Germany, and then, you know, the forced labor killings, and of course let's not leave out People's Republic of China or Kampuchea or.
You mean the people that United States of America has murdered, for example, in Iraq?
Let's
Vietnam,
not talk about that. We're Americans here. Oh, those things aren't important. Actually, American murders in Iraq are something I regularly discuss. After all, our valiant heroes or should we say valiant murderers are over there every day. Defending somebody's interests and occupying the country. But, again, let's not talk about that because, after all, it's more important that Obama win the election, right? That's the major focus we have to focus on. Forget everything else. Just put that in front of you. Actually, I'm kidding around, folks. The important thing is, of course, to address these issues so that if enough people do address them, then all the candidates will have to follow along or be left behind. We're talking with Clive Bustrade in a moment. Clive, can I get you to hold off briefly while I finish up this tape? Or should we just proceed? Why don't we just proceed with you? We'll hold off the tape. My former producer, Becky Johnson, would have liked that. She always felt I was giving short shrift to my guests. Your turn to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. With me is a man previously, you might call him a political prisoner, although I'm not sure if that's true or not. I know that... I heard just the other day, I got an email, something about Defend Clive Bustrade, who's, you put up a website talking about copper cards, and you have the website Liberty for Life, both of which are concerned with people wanting to restore their own rights and the rights of others. And you've talked to me about 30 or 40 groups throughout the country who are kind of working together to restore each other's rights as human
as
beings.
Citizens. Basically, what we copper cards, and that's like the metal copper cards, as in playing cards, coppercards.com, is basically trying to reinstall constitutional government. What we're trying to do is remove criminals from government and teach people what the Constitution actually gives us. We have everything we need in that Constitution. My favorite amendment, the Ninth Amendment, says that our rights shall not diminish. That means that the Patriot Act is void pursuant to the Ninth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment, which I know you're talking about earlier, saying that whenever anyone's dealing with a policeman, they should remain silent. But what people don't understand is that's merely a fifth of the Fifth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment starts off with one really important element, and that is that you may not be prosecuted without a grand jury indictment or presentment. That's the first part of the Fifth Amendment. Now, that's been completely ignored. Everything is being ignored. I'm literally being shot at, repeatedly being thrown in jail, and I've again had my children kidnapped from me. Our sheriffs here and our Commissioner Irwin Joseph and our courts have deemed me such a threat that I may not again communicate with my children after they stole my home this weekend. And literally stole my home.
I've actually visited your home. It's quite a fancy place. You have a swimming pool, or had a swimming pool. Perhaps you will have a swimming pool again. Who knows? What are your chances of getting back your house, and why was it taken? Or what pretext did they use to take it?
Well, there's this Commissioner Irwin Joseph, who's one of the primary defendants.
Junk Justice Joseph, we like to call him.
Junk Justice Joseph is one of the primary defendants in my lawsuit against the state and the Santa Cruz County. This is my third lawsuit. My first lawsuit went for a year and a half of hearings. 9 of the judges, 7 cops, 4 DAs, failed to make any appearance in a year and a half of hearings. However, they wouldn't recognize that as a default judgment. My second lawsuit against CHP for false arrest, that had the same appearance. And this lawsuit, again, is running. So while Irwin Joseph is desperately trying to get himself dismissed from this case I've filed against him and the state, he issued an order to evict me from my home.
Based on what evidence, under what claim?
Well, it's rather confusing in that regard. It appears...
Has to do with your wife seizing the property, your ex-wife?
Well, it appears from that he says, I haven't paid my mortgage. Now, one of the defendants in my lawsuit against the state is also Wells Fargo Bank, who's also failed to make an appearance. So, of course, they have defaulted on the loan that I've taken from them. So I don't have to pay that. The house is not in foreclosure or anything. And what's more important is 6 years ago, after I caught my ex-wife having an affair with my personal assistant and got divorced, I had to pay her out within 30 days or sell the house. Now, that's a stipulated court order. Quite clear, she's been paid off more than 6 years ago, but she simply refused to sign the quit claim deed. And after the sheriff shot at me in front of my kids on March 10, 2003, when my ex...
Which we actually talked about on the air.
Yeah, we covered that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They refused to get me any fair hearing. But what's happened from that point, when someone tries to kill you, you start studying intensively what's going on. And you can find a lot of that on the Liberty for Life site. That's libertyforlife.com, either F-O-R or number 4.
And that's really where people should go, because this is such a complicated and... relatively lengthy narrative to really get to the bottom of it. Some of it we discussed in some detail in a number of shows, Clive. What interests me more than your personal case, though it's quite shocking, and, you know, I can't say that I've gone to the DA and gotten her side, or gone to the, you know, Judge Junk Justice Joseph, who probably wouldn't talk to me about the matter anyway. But what's more important to me is you formed groups concerned with defending the civil rights of other people. And I'm just wondering, are there any groups in California that have successfully been getting some of their rights restored from Copper Cards? That's coppercards.com?
Yeah, coppercards.com. We officially launched that on July the 4th. We have about 40 guardians, and guardians signing up rapidly. What the construct there is, we create a guardian who then forms people around him, up to 1,000 people, no more than 1,000 people in his membership, in his little group we call a Copper Cards Guard. And these people stand together to enforce the law. And the Copper Cards themselves are these small little cards, business-sized cards, which teach you what the law is, primarily putting the Constitution in a very easy-to-use form.
Have you ever successfully been able to use the guardian or the cards to actually get cops to release people, courts to drop charges, DAs to say, oops?
Absolutely, yes.
Give me an example of one case.
Our arraignment card, for example, was developed after I had repeated cases filed against myself. The arraignment card is quite simple. When you get arrested, you're meant to be innocent until proven guilty, aren't you? So how is it that they arrest you before they've had a grand jury indictment or any trial?
I understand the theory. My question is, have you ever been able to put this into practice in such a way that a cop said, you're right, I can't arrest you, or a judge said, Mr. Officer, release this man because he has a right to a grand jury indictment before he's been arrested. Has that ever happened?
That has happened in a number of cases. But what we're seeing right now...
In terms of copper cards?
Yeah.
Give me an example.
Myself, I've had about the third, fourth, and fifth case, sixth and seventh case. Those are basically along those lines as we studied the law and found out exactly how to respond to those. We have other cases as well, too. A number of people who were arrested on 4th of July when they started asking to see the grand jury indictment and to see the verified criminal complaint that was filed against them and to understand exactly what the corpus delicti was in that crime, which is the damage. Of course, every crime needs to have the act, the intent, and the damage before it can be considered a crime. You find that the judges dismiss the cases because they don't want other people to find out about what's going on.
Well, I know that Ray Gordon, Richard Quigley, when he was alive, and Kate Wells tried to do this, and Kate, I know, gave up on it some two decades ago. She was working on it in the early 90s, and the verified complaint stuff is something that has not had much success that I'm aware of in Santa Cruz courts, unless you speak of inferentially. For those who don't know, that means a ticket is not enough. The DA has to actually give you a specific complaint if you're arrested alleging the crime. But in a way, it sounds like a technicality. What isn't a technicality is your two children, you no longer have access to them. They were actually taken away from you for quite a period of time before this, right?
Yeah, when they tried to murder me in front of my children, when the deputy sheriff, the shooting instructor for the sheriffs, Michael McDonald, ran up to my car and shot at me from a range of 5 to 7 feet, they ordered that I may not communicate with my children. Again, they've done this again. Irwin Joseph has ordered that I may not communicate with my children. Again,
how long did you have your children between the periods of incommunicado?
After they shot at me, they kept them completely isolated from me for about 4.5 to 5 months, and then they tried to let me only see them 1 hour every 4 weeks. A month after shooting at my kids were in direct line of fire when they shot at me. A month after that, they literally tried to interrogate my oldest boy. These poor little sons of mine have been through hell.
I hear you, but again, my question was, how long were you with your children after the incommunicado order was dropped? How long have they been with you this last time?
This last time. That was since 6 months after March 2003 up until...
So you've had them for about
3 or 4 years
now, and then now suddenly they're no longer with you.
Now they're no longer
with you. What's the allegation? Are you a bad dad?
No, they're not...
Do they allege you're a bad dad?
No, they're not alleging that.
Well, how can they take them from you if you're not a bad dad?
How could they take them from me when they shot at me?
Well, they were in the line of fire. You were a bad dad for endangering them for driving up your private road at 27 miles an hour. I think that was the... claim they made, or they claimed you were going 40 on a 27-mile.
They suggest I was doing 40, but the evidence from their NETCOM reports...
Right, but this time, what are they alleging that indicates that you're endangering your children?
I'm not quite sure, Robert. I think they're saying that I'm a felon.
And that endangers your children. There are a lot of people with children are going to be endangered in this country if they're a felon.
It appears to be, but there's somewhat confusion as to what felony I'm guilty of.
But you were a felon before, if you were a felon at all, because there's been no change in your... You haven't been convicted of anything new since they took your children, right?
Well, no, there seems to be some additions to my file. Someone's indicating that I was guilty of a felony child endangerment. Not that they ever charged me of a felony child endangerment, but perhaps that's because I was in my car when they shot at me.
A previous charge of felony child endangerment is what they're using.
No, I never had one.
A previous potential charge of felony child
endangerment. Well, when federal court...
A fanciful notion of...
Well, you know, they do respond to questions. Federal court issued...
What strikes me is $200,000 bail. 2 weeks ago, you were taken into custody when they... You, as I understand it, you were invited to a meeting with sheriffs as a mediation around this house business.
Correct. So Aaron Joseph, who's a primary defendant in the lawsuit I filed against the state, issued this order about a month and a half ago. Now, I put him on notice...
The order to have your house taken.
Evicted from my house. I put him on notice that Amy Miller, who lived with me, was in critical condition. In fact, she was in critical care in the hospital at that point in time. And I said, just don't go there. This is going to affect poor Amy. Amy came out of hospital, saw that illegal order, which actually Kate Wells and I called up the sheriffs, and they agreed then that it was an illegal order. Mm-hmm. And Amy got so nervous that she moved in this critical condition. Amy is dead today as a consequence. I was filing manslaughter charges
against
her.
When did she die?
She died about 3-4 weeks ago.
And you say she moved because of her fear of being evicted by Irwin Joseph's order.
Correct. I was actually filing manslaughter charges against Irwin Joseph, my ex, and her lawyer, Vicky.
Which you're not allowed to do in this state.
They wouldn't take them. No, they wouldn't allow
them. You have to be a district attorney. Now, we could run you for DA.
So the next thing, there's actually a way to do that. It's called quo warranto, and we can talk about that, too.
At some point, but not tonight. I think we've got
tonight,
a lot of stuff
so,
to do.
So what, then Irwin Joseph issued another eviction order to evict me from my home, exactly the same as the last one. So I called up the sheriff's and
again, based on the fact that your ex-wife, supposedly, she hadn't signed the quit claim deed, and she had proved to the Irwin Joseph's satisfaction that it was her house? Is that the idea?
Well, no, she hadn't proved anything. I'd submitted into court all the evidence that she'd been paid out and all the calls.
But Joseph found it was her house, right?
Sorry?
He found it was... No, he found that you hadn't paid your mortgage. I'm trying to understand the basis.
He's trying to say, of course, I hadn't paid my mortgage. It would therefore be her house.
I see, okay.
But, of course, there's no basis to evict me from the house in the first place anyway. But he issued this other eviction order. I called up the sheriffs and said, this is crazy. This is another bogus order. And they said they weren't sure. So I sent them an email. And actually, you can go to the Liberty for Life website and you can click on the urgent alert. And you can see the very email that I sent the sheriffs, along with all the proof that there's no way that my ex had any right to the title, and it's substantial. And also that there's no way Irwin Joseph, a defendant in a lawsuit and a commissioner, no less, not even a judge who hadn't acceded to his jurisdiction, could issue an order to evict me from my home. So they got all the information, and they said, well, let's get together and have a meeting. So I scheduled a meeting with them. The sergeant I was meeting with was Christy Swanick. Christy Swanick was notified by Fred Plagman that her aunt had died, and unfortunately she couldn't make the meeting, so they rescheduled it to Tuesday of the week, last week, week before last, actually. So I'm expecting to go and meet up with the sheriffs and show them all this information that there's no way my ex owns my home and there's no way that Irwin Joseph's order is legitimate. In fact, I hadn't even seen the order. I'd never been served the order.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to pick up my poor little boys for the weekend. And my boys love... I'm very, very close to my boys.
How old are they?
They're now 12 and 8.
Uh-huh.
And this weekend we were going to go shooting and we were going to go surfing with my little boys. And you know,
shooting your rifle range?
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's
what NRA?
Any good dad should teach his boys to shoot.
Mm.
So going down to pick up my boys, I find my ex isn't in the park, and Anna Maria Tashatska's just nowhere in that parking lot. I'm driving out looking for her, so I call her, and she says, oh, she's near the restaurant. So I'm heading off to the restaurant when I see, descending from all different directions, about 7 sheriff's cars. Now, I'm concerned that they're going to shoot me again, so I quickly drive a little two rows down and park next to where all the guys meet every Saturday morning to compare
now,
their
where is this
cars.
Again?
This is in the Safeway parking lot on 41st Street.
Okay.
I jump out, lock my car, and call to the people, please help, go to coppercards.com, enter into, and if you go to coppercards.com, you'll see we have a 119 alert. You can go and fill out, for any of our members, you fill that out and say, Clive's been arrested, or if you were a member, that Robert's been arrested, and immediately our 119 SWAT team process kicks into gear.
Mm-hmm.
They form, and they will put habeas corpuses in for you, they'll understand what's going on with respect to the law, but that didn't make much difference in my case. They arrested me. Drove, and I'm heading off to the jail.
Were they brutal in the arrest or courteous?
No, they were trying to grab my keys and my cell phone. They were just desperate to grab my keys, and so grabbed my that, emptied my pockets, put me in a car with everything that they had on me, and I'm driving off. When they called the car back to say they wanted to search my vehicle, so they turned around and took my keys back and searched my vehicle. At the same time, unbeknown to me, they'd also rushed up to my home and arrested Peter, who lives up at my home. And Peter Fotenhauer, who's staying up there, they arrested him apparently for resisting arrest. After taking Peter out of my home, my neighbor tells me 2 white vans pitched up at my house. They broke into my home. They stole my safe and stole a whole lot of other stuff from my home. I was sitting in the holding cell when Peter actually arrived, and they arrested him too. So they used this pretense of a bogus order.
Is Peter a relative of Paul Fotenhauer?
Yes, yes, yes. Fine young man.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Paul Fotenhauer was one of the founders of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program and one of the original Citizens Committee for the Homeless People, along with Paul Lee and Paige Smith in the mid-80s. Go ahead.
Yes.
We're talking with Clive Bustrade. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, Freak Radio. Clive has been released from jail. He's here with us today, believe it or not. He had a $200,000 bail on him. That's I would say that's about, what, 12 or 13 times as much as Rico Westmoads, the trash orchestra guy who was arrested yesterday with $15,000 bail had on him. So I got to find some way to, you know, when I get arrested, I'm going to find some way to top that. I think you've kind of almost hit the top. $200,000 is more than Jerry Henry.
Well, no. The first time they arrested me, they put bail at $150,000. All the other times they arrested me, they set no bail. No right to bail. Now, for example, the second time they arrested me was on the six-month anniversary of them shooting at me, and I was told by lawyers to wait for the very last moment to file my complaint. So I was patiently waiting for the very last moment to file my complaint, which was obviously set up because that night before they set up and accused me of violating three court orders and trespassing on my church's own property and set out to arrest me. Completely bogus.
With a no bail?
No, right.
How long after? Well, you know, this we could talk about. This is an amazing subject, interesting, go into it for hours, but the drums have got to be heard, and I want to talk about that. And I also know that you have a hearing tomorrow on an issue which I understand is kind of arcane, and you're likely to lose in federal court, not here in local court, but
No, not in federal court. No, I've got a local court. If anyone would like to come along, I welcome you to come along. Although, generally, whenever we have an audience, they generally don't do much. It's going to be at 8:30, I believe, in Department Number 7 in Santa Cruz Superior Court. I'm not quite sure what the hearing is for, but when I was thrown in jail, they kept me 4 days, and they took me in front of Judge Jeff Almquist. When I pointed out to Mr. Almquist that I was suing him and I had sued him in the past, he promptly recused himself, and I was sent back to jail. I asked to be released, but they wouldn't release me. They then took me the next day to Judge Samuel S. Stevens. Now, Judge Samuel S. Stevens, I have sued in the past. He's caused tremendous damage and committing heinous crimes against myself and my family, and I have a current lawsuit against him. When I pointed that out to Judge Samuel S. Stevens, he, of course, ignored that and was so kind as to enter a plea for me, which I objected to and said, no, thank you very much. And then he had the bailiff, well, I was trying to put the facts on the record, he had the bailiffs throw me out of the courtroom and send me back to jail.
With what bail?
With $200,000 bail.
So he raised the bail.
There was two charges they filed against me. One, they said that I had threatened an unknown public official with an unknown threat, and that I had disobeyed a order that I'd never been served, and that was $100,000 bail. And then they charged me with having guns. All of my guns, of course, purchased lawfully. I had to get permits to buy all of them. Mm-hmm. And they filed another five felonies against me for having guns.
A felony for each gun?
No, they sort of said they made up concoction of different sorts of things.
And that was the basis for the house search, looking for the guns? Or?
No, they didn't have a warrant to do
that. You have a gun on you, by the way. I may have to pat you down.
It depends what you call a gun.
I won't get into that. Makes me a little nervous. My homophobia is kicking in here.
No, well, actually, I will get out of here very quickly.
Yeah, that's okay.
But, the issues we're looking at. Interestingly, I picked up when I was in jail, do you know about the $4 million lawsuit that
The strip search law.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Mark Maron, actually, is now doing a lawsuit against the sleeping ban in Sacramento, their sleeping ban, successfully won a lawsuit in both Santa Cruz County in terms of its jail, and I think San Francisco as well. And people who have been strip searched in the last couple of years should get in touch with Mark Maron or the American Civil Liberties Union, although I hesitate to use that name on the air considering what kind of a travesty the local ACLU is here, because you can probably get some money kicked down to you. So, Clive, I know that you're going to – so this is going to be happening tomorrow at 8:30 in Department 7. And is this a hearing on the issue of whether Stevens should be disqualified? Or?
No, it's something they've scheduled, and I'm not quite sure what they want to do in this.
It's an issue, but you'll be able to see this this criminal dog in all his barking finery.
Well, no, it won't be my finery. I haven't got any of my possessions. I've literally been thrown out of my house, although I did get a note from my ex-wife today saying that my possessions were in a
dumpster in the edge of town?
She claimed that she'd left all of my... I have a 5,000-square-foot home, Robert, as you know.
This guy is as wealthy as they come, man. What if I got some wealthy clown like this in the studio for us? What I want to know.
Well, okay, so I'm thrown in jail, and she tells me that she'd taken all of my possessions and put them in a 10 by 18...
storage locker?
Storage locker. I did find the storage locker today, and I went to the company, and there were my motorbike and my little boy's motorbikes, and a pile of trash bags, taking about half the space of this 10 by 18.
Well, what about your guns, man?
And the sheriff stole those.
Oh dear. Well, tomorrow at 8:30, people can check out this. Frankly, you look pretty well dressed for a guy who's had his property taken, but I guess it's because
I've got my flip flops on and
you have
shorts.
Your flip flops, shorts, and the guy's got long hair, but at least he doesn't have a beard like some people. Clive, I want you to come back and give us an update on how things went on the hearing. Maybe you can come in on Sunday. You can call in. If anybody has any questions of Clive before I either I'm not going to shoo you out of the studio. I'm going to invite you to stay, but you may get bored with the issues, which you know don't involve houses, attempted murder, theft of guns, corrupt judges. Well, possibly corrupt judges. We'll have to see what happens with that. I believe Wes Moses is going to court tomorrow. He's the guy who's charged with trying to seize a prisoner away from the police. That's called lynching. It's a strange use of the word lynching. Usually you think of that as being, you know, slipping a noose around someone's neck. This is...
I feel somewhat lynched. Do you think I could...
you could possibly, you know, you could try to charge the governmental authorities, which you've been trying to do unsuccessfully.
Well, it wasn't lynching. They just shot at me.
Oh, well.
Sorry. It's a different
they were simply, you know, these were warning shots. You didn't take their warning, did you? Here you are babbling away about this. Can't you take a hint?
Yeah, I guess, you know, my grandpa, he fought in both the First World War and the Second World War.
Oh, that was a mistake, wasn't it?
It was, and I was drafted into the military, as you know, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. I was drafted into the same Hegelian dialectic that our
And did
Nazi...
you kill a few Vietnamese while you were over
no,
there?
No. I wasn't drafted into that war, fortunately, pork suckers.
Perhaps a few Grenadans?
Well, just as bad, though. But, you know, I was born in South Africa, and I was born and drafted in South African military, where I can say I trained guys to kill freedom fighters. And I left South Africa, get away from government, and I came here. And it's worse, frankly. But what I have realized is that you cannot run away from bad government. We have to fix it. And if we stand together, which is what we're doing on Copper Cards, there's no way in hell these criminals are going to get away with what they're doing. But you have to not fear tyranny. Tyranny feeds on fear. When there is no fear, tyranny flees. And we have to stand together. And remember what Samuel Chase said. We all most certainly hang separately.
If we do not hang together... Yeah. They will all certainly hang several. Yeah. I thought that was either Tom Paine or Benjamin Franklin.
A lot of the founders said that. No, listen, we're in the same position
today.
The
rich white slave owners, except Paine wasn't a slave owner.
We're in the same position today.
And some of the things they said were worth listening to in spite of their assets and their skin color and their privilege.
Don't be prejudicial.
Well, I am prejudiced against corrupt judges and rich old white men. Even, of course, sometimes they're worth listening to in spite of their wealth and in spite of their privilege, as I said. I mean, even listen to myself sometimes. Never can tell. Talking to Clive Boustrade again. He can be found at libertyforlife.com. Go online, check him out. Also, coppercards.com if you'd like to form a protective group of your own. I can't say whether these groups are any good. I hear his claims. I'd like to see some more evidence, and perhaps we'll get some more evidence. You're invited back to the studio on the Sunday show if you'd like to come in again and join me. That's going to be 9:30 on Sunday morning, and... You, of course, can bring me basted eggs with a hollandaise. Actually, you probably don't have access to your assets.
No, I don't really have any access to any.
You must have some nice friends to get you out of $200,000 bail.
I have. This is what life's about.
Well, tell them we've got a guy in jail who deserves to be, who led the march to take back public space in Santa Cruz and is rotting in jail because of it.
One just closing, and I'll look. Maybe we can do this in the next session. While sitting in jail without any of my functions, all I can do is think. Now, most of my career, I've developed strategy for most of the top telcos and computer companies. We have laws in this nation. When a judge breaks the law, for example, if he allows someone to come into his court and be prosecuted without a grand jury indictment existing, which is dictated by law, he breaks the law. A judge may not be a lawbreaker. If a judge breaks a law, he can no longer sit on the bench.
All judges do this, though.
The same applies to the district attorney and the sheriff.
And all DAs do it. So the question is, who are you going to get to? Who's going to watch the watchbirds here?
We the people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see if that watch gets anywhere. I think you're right in terms of the simpler things, like taking back public space. And that's what we're going to talk about next. Hang if you'd like. We've been talking to Clive Bustrade, and he'll be here in the studio. You can call in if you've got questions for him, comments, 427-3772. Erwin Joseph, call in and tell us what you think about all this. Although, frankly, I doubt you will. Let's take a brief musical break with Roy Bailey.
Done my time in World War II, got wounded for the nation. Now my lungs are all shot down, there ain't no compensation. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time, one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. Doctor says I smoke too much. He says that I'm not trying. He says he don't know what I've got, but we both know he's lying. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time, one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. Last time I went near my job, I thought my lungs were broken. My chest bound down with iron chains, I couldn't breathe for choking. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time, one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. Politicians in this state are nothing short of rotten. They buy us off with fancy words and sell us out to cotton. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time, one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. Says both lungs are gone, there ain't no way to shake it. But I can't live without a job, somehow I've got to take it. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time, one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. Tell me I can't work at all, there ain't no need of trying. But living like some used up thing is just this short of dying. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time, one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. On my front porch swing, I'm like a man forgotten. Head filled up with angry thoughts, lungs filled up with cotton. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time, one more time. I'm gonna go to work on Monday one more time.
And that was Roy Bailey again with Go to Work on Monday from his album sit down and sing. Free Radio is what you're listening to, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, call-in numbers 427-3772. We were listening to some interviews prior to Clive Bustrade, whose discussion of his $200,000 seizure, the seizure of him, as he bailed out on with the $200,000 bail. He's actually the biggest criminal or the most expensive one I've ever had in my studio. Boy, I got to have to start looking around for the million-dollar men and women. Not my studio. It's our studio. It's your studio. It's Free Radio Studio. It's the studio here. The secret studio, of course. Prior to Clive's coming on, we were listening to an interview from yesterday with a man on Pacific Avenue who described an incident that was happening when he was in front of the Taqueria Vallarta and he was being interrogated by an officer named, I think it was Laura. Laura. And then Sergeant Harms was there, and he felt like he shouldn't have to be interrogated, but he was felt like he was forced to. And let's finish up that interview and then move on with the afternoon. It looks like we're not going to get to the entire swath of interviews at the Drum Circle. We will get to some of them, and there will be some more of this on Sunday at 9:30 when this I have my another edition of the show, and you'll be able to hear more. Stay tuned.
Police before, have you ever been arrested?
He didn't answer the question, in other words.
Right.
And if a police officer asks you further questions, the best thing to do is to repeat your original question and say, well, officer, if I'm not being detained, then I'm going to leave. Have a good day, unless I'm... And you slowly begin to move away and say, I'm assuming I can go.
It's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's part of the Know Your Rights seminar, which Free School puts out sometimes, and it's also good to know. Police officers, even under the Patriot Act, 9/11, and the Coonerty regime in Santa Cruz, have less power than they pretend to. And a lot of the power they get is because we give it to them.
That's true.
I think so. Sergeant Harms, you got a minute?
Sure.
I got a question for you.
Okay, what is it?
Well,
you want me to come to you?
If you can, if you're willing. I mean, you know, it is. Well, it's good. It's good exercise for you. You recognize this man, perhaps?
Of course I do.
He tells me that you and your fellow officers detained him without his permission and did not inform him that he had the right to leave. Is that true?
I don't believe so, no.
So did you detain him for a real reason? Was he under arrest? Or
When was this?
A few weeks ago.
A few weeks ago.
It wasn't him. It was Laura. The female.
Right, but Sergeant...
No, I am familiar with that. There was a problem that was going on over there, as you're aware of. So anybody that's in the area is going to probably be detained until we can work it out, and then you can then you're free to leave.
So some individual who looked like him was a suspect in a crime?
Yes, we'd been called for some kind of a disturbance that had been there. I don't know if it was a fight or what it was. I only have a vague recollection of it, but I do remember talking to him over there.
Do you recall a disturbance yourself of any kind?
No, it was just a group of my friends over there playing music.
Right.
But I was just walking by.
I think it was a little bit more than that. Not that everybody that's in the group knows exactly what's going on, but some passerby called it in. I don't have specific recollection, but I think there was a fight.
But you would certainly agree that, because I know that you say you asked if you were had a right to go, and the officers evaded your question.
Mm-hmm.
He nods.
Yeah.
So, but you would assure the public that people do not have to talk to police officers unless A, they're under arrest or detention, or B, they choose to. Correct.
Correct.
So we'll talk. We'll listen more to Sergeant Harms work his way around this question, because I think that's what the sergeant is doing, although I don't doubt his sincerity. Because on the line with us, we have a people power and a powerful people power guy, Micah Posner. Hey, Micah.
Hi, Robert. I'm not calling as a people power person. I'm just calling as a human who cares about civil rights.
True. Although you bicyclists are impacted by the parking lot panic law, as you know.
As you should
know, for heaven's sake. Actually, I should ask you, have any bicyclists complained to People Power that they've gotten citations from cops or been told by cops, leave a parking lot, you can't be here for more than 15 minutes unless if you're parking or retrieving your bike?
No.
Good.
No, I don't think they've...
You see, you have
I might have to go.
The baby in the background.
The boss is calling me.
Oh, do you want to call back when you got a moment? Or do you want to leave it at this? I mean, I know you were concerned about the Drum Circle, right?
Yeah, I'll have to try to call back. I might not be able to, but I care and hope everyone else cares. And let's try to keep our rights to congregate. So.
And you may be there next week, huh?
Yeah, I'd like to try to be there next week. Hopefully everyone else is. Let's do something fun. Maybe I'll bring a frisbee. We can bring bocce balls. Let's have fun with our public space. That's, I guess, what I want to say.
Sounds good. Have fun with the public space.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Thanks, Micah. Micah's a man in the know who, you know, likes to maintain friendly relations with city council members, friendlier than I would find comfortable often. But, you know, if you can do it, I guess it's good. And he also, I think, is concerned about these issues, too, about restoring public space to public use, and he suggests that we have fun next Wednesday at the farmers market when people return to presumably again do what they normally do, which is some people will drum, some will eat food, some will hang out, some will sing and dance and gamble, gamble meaning like jump up and down. Here's a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, this is Tenderfoot Tim.
Tenderfoot Tim, how are you?
I'm doing good. I got a report. West has been released.
Oh, excellent.
They didn't know what to charge him with.
They didn't.
They couldn't figure out what charges. That's the only details I really know.
Now, Wes, of course, is Wes Modes, who's a trash orchestrato, who actually was with the, you often see him drumming at, with the trash orchestra drummers, and helped to restore the right to public assembly yesterday, a week ago, and I guess in early January, and actually for the entire last 8 months until the police decided to close down the area again.
Yes. He took a stand for us all and almost paid a big price for it. We'll see what kind of price he's going to pay.
Do I understand that Wes was OR'd out without a bail?
Yes, he was OR'd out without a bail because they had obtained a lawyer. And from what I was told was they couldn't, you know, all those charges they mentioned in the paper weren't official charges. And they have to charge you within a certain amount of time, and they couldn't figure out what to charge him with. So they had to let him out, although, you know, he's still going to have to appear at some point, I guess. I'm not clear on that. But I did ask if I could call, you know, let guys know that he's out.
That's very interesting. You know, I mean, for those who are interested, there was a reporter there whom actually I heard Micah Posner, our last caller, Genevieve Bookwalter, who wrote a horrible story.
Yeah,
about
she's like a police puff piece.
Yeah, she's a police, police mouthpiece for sure, and a puffy one at that, although she's, you know, slim and trim herself and fashionably dressed.
Yeah, good for her.
right. But, you know, her story, I'm actually going to her story in the Sentinel. People can read it online. Boy, if I could get this boom mic to work, I would be so happy. But it doesn't want to seem to. There we go. That works a little better. the story is Melee erupts at Farmer's Market.
Yeah, notice they combined it with a whole other story about a dead body they found.
Initially they did, and then I think later on it was given its own independent stinky existence. In this story, they quote Steve Clark, of course, a notorious police officer. Captain Steve Clark is quoted. The issue is not about drumming. It is about behavior and aggression toward police officers. She begins by quoting a captain. She does give some interesting information. She claims that Wesley Modes, 41 of Felton, and Jack Rusk, 20 of Concord, were arrested about 3:45 p.m. Wednesday in the parking lot at Cedar and Cathcart. Modes faces charges of assault, resisting an officer, and lynching, which in this instance means taking away someone who is in police custody. Rusk was charged with resisting an officer and vandalism. Rusk was cited out, and Wesley was kept in custody. And I guess now he was released 24 hours later. So,
yeah, initially after having a $15,000 bail, but apparently that got changed.
And he's now at liberty.
Yeah, he's out.
Well, Wes, call in and complain, please, or at least advise us
about how he just got out.
He like just got out. Oh, well, he should hobble his way over to the studio. I understand he required stitches after the police were done with him. He was taken to the hospital, right?
Yeah, I know he was taken to a hospital, but I don't know any details about that.
And there was a period of 4 hours, according to one of
his... He wasn't booked till 10:20, according to the...
Yeah, he was arrested at 3:45. He was booked at 10:28, I believe. And according to Wes himself, the period of time... This I got this through a third party who spoke to Wes by phone. That,
yeah, same third party I spoke to.
Often there's a period of time in jail when you wait in the holding cell, but in this situation he was held by the police for 4 hours. Some of that time must have been to and from the hospital. Possibly some of that time was getting roughed up here and there, or possibly the roughing up happened in the course of the arrest.
I didn't, you know, I looked at the video frame by frame. I didn't see any injuries. People asked him if he was injured. I'm interested to find out what really happened. I'll have to talk to Wes.
Right, I hope he calls in. Any comments, Tenderfoot, about what you... I know you've been very good at video work. You posted some great video on the last Farmers Market drum circle, which involved harassment of a marijuana person who said he was too poor for medical marijuana use, but he got a marijuana ticket anyway, and then else got a traffic ticket.
Cards are expensive. You can't find a doctor to write you a prescription. You got to go pay Medican. It's $95, I think, which, it's a lot of money for some people.
Yeah, and of course the whole idea that you should have to do any of this simply to use marijuana is abusive. And is, it's a form of imposition. It's kind of like religious tyranny. Some people have this religious fanaticism about drugs. It has nothing to do with the fact that the most lethal drugs are often the most legal drugs.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
it's incredible. Any other thoughts, Tenderfoot, you want to pass on to us about this? I know you've been covering a lot of the different media. You followed Fox News and ABC and all these other...
I was just really just displeased, as I normally am, with the mainstream media. They did a couple, real 30-second clips about, a bunch of thugs backing up the police against a wall and, made it sound like it was just a bunch of criminals attacking the police, and then, that was it. And then, of course, Jennifer's senile piece. And everything I saw on TV was just ridiculous. The only fair article I saw was at SantaCruz.com. I thought that was a fairly fair article. And, of course, the pictures by Bradley were good, and some of the commentary on Indy Bay. The commentary not so good, but as far as comments, I think it's important that the public space is kept for the public, and I just think that in Santa Cruz they're squeezing the public space for the poor or anybody who wants to congregate who doesn't look the way they want them to look, to the point where there's no place for them to be, and then they put these green fences up.
Who is Wes's attorney? Do we know?
The third party that we're talking about gave me the name, and I stupidly didn't.
It isn't Katya Komisarek, is it?
That sounds familiar, but I don't want to say for sure because I don't know.
Right, Katya worked with Wes and with.
I believe that's the name she said, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, she's actually quite famous. She was my attorney once about 10 years ago. She became on pro bono.
Nearly sure that's it, but I don't want to say.
Yeah,
sure.
Katya wrote a book called Beat the Heat, which actually you can, if you Google for Beat the Heat, you can find her book about how to deal with police who come up to you and start asking you questions or want to come into your house or want to search your car or just want to get a little cooperation, all that sort of thing. And
yeah.
She's got a lot of it. And actually Wes and other members of, the Free School have put together a kind of Fight Your Rights seminar, which they...
Yeah, I've attended one, and they were great, man.
Yeah, they play role play police officers, and they'll come up and they'll actually pretend to arrest you, and they'll teach you what to say to a police officer to essentially get the officer to either leave you alone or charge you with something.
Yeah,
it's
actually really helped me that one time I took that class, and also listening to.
And the class is free. It is done in public. Last time it was done, it was, I believe. Well,
yeah, they dressed up in full uniform.
And they did it in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. Neil and Ryan Coonerty's lair, the mayor and the supervisor. And, they were, I don't think they came out, though, to get the training. They're too bad. I think they could probably benefit from it.
Yeah.
After all, Ryan is a constitutional attorney.
Perhaps
an unconstitutional attorney. Go ahead.
Well, one thing I wanted to point out is I think that it's expanded beyond an issue of just a drum circle anymore. It's expanded now to an issue of the legal right to protest. as well as, you know, the legal right to have some public space.
You're talking about the idea of being able to use the parking lots for things other than parking a vehicle or a bicycle.
Yeah, giving out flyers, having a protest, just like any other, you know, place in America. We're supposed to have the right
to
protest.
Well, not according to Mayor Coonerty in our Santa Cruz City Council.
Yeah, to call a Code 3 out and call every officer in the county to arrest two guys that they know are nonviolent and were not acting violent. I looked at every frame of that video. He never pushed his drum up against an officer.
Maybe that's why they didn't have anything to charge him with when the rubber met the road, huh?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. The question to me is that since the drummers have said they're going to, some of them are going to move to the town clock next Wednesday, and there are some others, myself among them, are going to try to continue to restore the space at parking lot number 4, because I think the drummers do deserve, some drummers who are really tired of these police incidents and invasions and
I understand
drama.
People wanting,
I think we need to save the space for them. You know, we need to use the space ourselves for other activities. I know Micah Posner, who just called in, suggested having fun at that space. He suggested maybe we can have, you know, I don't know, hacky sacking or frisbeeing or stuff that, all of which is illegal, by the way, downtown under the downtown other downtown ordinances make it illegal to throw a frisbee.
Right, yeah, or hacky sack.
Or hacky sack, yeah, that's true. I think
you
can't throw football, you know, that's not legal downtown because, it's inappropriate downtown.
Blowing bubbles.
And blowing bubbles is, I believe, legal if you are a professional bubble blower.
Yes.
And juggling is legal due to the Tom Noddy exception created in 2003. But a lot of other activities, more obvious ones like sitting down to rest on the sidewalk, are illegal unless you are 14 feet away from a building. And we need to have some mass challenges of that law as well. So there are a lot of things that need to be challenged. Maybe this will provide the impetus, and maybe we can create some kind of a protest coming up next week or just some kind of a happy festival event. Of course, there are going to be people who say, well, just get a permit for the parking lot, and you can use it, which, of course, misses the point. You don't need
a
permit.
You know, it's a broader issue than just the drum circle now. It's the right for people to be able to assemble, the right to protest.
The right to be free from having the police called in en masse. And the kind of intimidating force that they were on Wednesday, I think.
Yeah. I agree. And I think with the amount of people that came out last time, and a lot of them weren't drummers, and I think a lot of people were there for that very reason, not just to support the drummers, which was a good thing, but also just for the right to be able to protest and the right to be able to use our ever-shrinking public space, you know, where we're not allowed to sit within 10 feet of this or, you know,
by the way, there was
of that.
There supposedly was a protest that happened today.
I wanted to ask you about that because
at 3
o'clock. Saw all that confusing.
Yeah, there were a number of, there were some posters on Indy Bay who talked about or wrote about a protest on Ocean Street that they were going to hold previously was going to be against the PED. A pedestrian bicycle bridge that was being planned down near, I guess, Highway 1, I thought it might be a hoax, because I thought that it sounded a little strange. It sounded like the kind of stuff that some of the Sentinel writers attacking the drummers write, and I suggested it might be a hoax. And what I got for my trouble was, first the post was deleted by Indy Bay, finally it was restored. And then there were a lot of clearly hoax posts that said, oh, we've talked to Robert Norris, and he's a big supporter of this protest. And I would support a protest, but nobody talked to me. Nobody verified that it was happening. And so I don't know. And if anybody knows if there was a protest at 3 o'clock today supporting Wes, let me know. Otherwise, I would say
sure
there probably
wasn't. It was complete bullshit.
Yeah, I would say
and
so.
And I think it was a distraction technique from, you know, some of these.
Yeah, I think it's an attempt to confuse people and kind of make people mistrust each other. And, you know, that can happen. I think you just got to keep posting facts as you know them. And what I do is I post my phone number. If somebody wants to call me up, and I'll verify that it's me writing, and I'll stand behind what I write. Tim, I appreciate your calling in. Is there more you want to say?
No, just want to let you know what was going on.
All right, maybe we can get a call from Wes or get a call from anybody else who saw the instances on Wednesday, has an opinion about it.
He may be decompressing at the moment, but you might. I told him I'd be calling in to let him know that you guys know that he was out.
Thank you for calling.
No problem. Take care.
All righty. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. And, of course, by this time, we've only got 12 minutes left in the show. I guess I probably should make a few quick announcements, if anything. Let's see what we got here. Next, the war funding bill passed the Senate, as folks probably know. We'll talk about that maybe on Sunday. Interesting email from Steve Argue on the economic situation. And I guess I'll play a little more of the interviews from the street, because I'm going to be working through these when I come back on Sunday. You'll be hearing more of the actual drum circle activity. Hopefully there'll be a nice, massive false arrest lawsuit, because I understand at least one person was struck by a police officer. He called me up, and he's actually posted on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz looking for witnesses to the police officer who struck him. He has the officer's badge number, and he wants to see that kind of behavior is, first of all, that he gets some remedial care and the officer is held accountable, and possibly, who knows what else, something that makes sure it doesn't happen to the next person. Let's hear a little from the streets.
Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding of the law, and yeah. I would hope everybody should feel free if they don't feel that either one of those things is met.
This is Sergeant Harms assuring us that police officers certainly do not want to give people the misimpression that they have to talk to the police officer. You can move along if you want. That's why they always tell you, you don't have to talk to me if you don't want to. Remember your last encounter with a police officer. Remember the last time a police officer told you, you don't have to talk to me if you don't want to. Of course, they never say that.
To, of course, walk away. They'll be, thank you. They'll be told right then if they're
right.
Free to leave.
Well, that's what I hope would
be
the case. And I know in a professional department with individuals who are concerned about constitutional rights, that would happen. For some reason, this individual got the impression he could not walk away. And you're saying it was because there was reasonable suspicion to suspect him of a crime. Is that right?
It's a possibility. Like I said, I showed up afterward. I remember that there was some kind of disturbance that we were called to. I showed up. He was sitting on the side of on the sidewalk over there.
What's your reaction to what Sergeant Harms has said? The point here, before we hear his reaction, is Harms contributes absolutely no indication that there was reasonable suspicion or probable cause, other than seeing there's an individual sitting on the sidewalk that some other cops are interrogating. And he, of course, assumes his fellow officers would never stop someone or give them the misimpression that they have the obligation to be there and talk to the police when they don't. Of course, since that's standard police practice to advise, to give the impression to people that they have to talk to them when they don't, that, of course, is a misimpression from Sergeant Harms, too. Or, let's say it this way, maybe he's just naive?
It sounds reasonable from his perspective. I mean, he showed up late, and he was very kind to me, but the other police officers told me to sit down. I literally was just walking by, I asked my friend what's going on, and then the female police officer started asking me questions and told me to sit down.
Well, I hope we've cleared this matter up. You will talk to the officers in question and remind them of the rights of the citizenry, I'm sure, Sergeant Harms. I haven't seen anything that disputes anything that I'm aware of or that goes against anything that would have reasonably been done at the time. Officers responding to the scene of a disturbance would probably have everybody sit down just out of the safety of everybody.
Except he says he was walking by. So why would they stop someone walking by?
Who happens to be walking by or who happens to
have a beard and sort of raggedy clothing, eh?
Oh, now you're being ridiculous.
Well, I don't know if I'm being ridiculous. I'm asking you.
You're being ridiculous now.
Please make no discriminations on that basis. There's not a particular...
No, there's absolutely nothing to do with his scruffy beard. I happen to like it.
Now, wait a minute. Are you coming on to this man, Sergeant Harm?
Now you're being ridiculous.
Now, well, yes, a little bit on this again.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I prefer his beard to yours.
Oh, you see, now there you are. Prejudice and favoritism. Thank you, Sergeant Harm.
And you're not homeless, are you?
Homely, but not homeless.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sergeant Harms has returned to the scene of three folks eating pizza, chatting, and hanging with a guitar, just sort of standing around in the group, and the group is ignoring him. What's your impression? I mean, I kind of like Sergeant Harms because he goes into dialogue with you, but my question is, why is he doing this? I mean, is he doing it because he enjoys the company or because he wants to encourage the company to move on that's up the street from you? What do you think?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Looks like Sergeant Harms himself has moved on. He's keeping an eye on people sitting on the bench next to a police squad car. In any case, we've been talking with...
Jason.
And good luck. It looks like you are getting some food donations.
Yeah, eating it right now. Thank you.
Not necessarily the best, but still. Take care. So let me hear this again. We're talking with?
Justin McNeil.
Justin, you're here actually in the group where Sergeant Harms was standing, kind of overlooking you, and there's a guitar nearby there, but she is seated on the sidewalk. And you say that you tried to use the police services.
It was about a week and a half to 2 weeks ago. I was in front of Quiznos on Pacific Avenue, and I had a gun pulled in my face, and the people inside Quiznos called the cops. One of the city workers called the cops, and somebody in one of the stores across the street from Quiznos called the cops, and it took them a half an hour to 45 minutes to arrive. And yeah, I just find that really strange, because like whenever one of us street kids does something wrong, they're always here like that.
Well, they have much more respect for you than they do for these other criminals. They really like coming to your, at least when you, not to your aid necessarily, but to aid the merchants in moving you along.
Well, I mean, it's just really, I think it's kind of messed up that, like, they always harass us when all we're trying to do is ask people who are walking down the street for their leftovers, and we end up getting tickets. I mean, for God's sake, I seen one of my friends get a ticket for spitting on the sidewalk.
And actually, I saw a sergeant spit on the sidewalk a week ago today, not a block from here, and for some reason he didn't ticket himself.
Right. Well, I mean, do as I say, not as I do, right? Hey, can you spare any leftovers?
And there you are, the leftover man. Any other comments from any other of you ne'er-do-well types here? Smokers, I might add.
No.
I like cigarettes.
There you are. Are you guys coming to the drum circle today?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we will be there.
So will I. And we're at the farmer's market, aisle one, as I call it. Three is the one closest to the drum circle. So you can hear a little amplified music here with no permit, but again, folks have a permit to be in this area. About the drum circle, whether it's bothering people or is okay, or how people feel about it in the farmer's market. You want to say something about that?
It doesn't bother me so much because I'm fairly far away from it, but I do have a couple friends who are vendors who are closer to the drum circle, and they say it really affects their business. And it would be a shame if they couldn't come to the market because they don't make any money at the market, which would, you know, overall decrease the viability of this market. So
you yourself are you're the egg woman. Was it fair to call you that?
Yeah.
What's your first name?
Rebecca.
Rebecca, you're located actually, I would call it at the end of the second aisle here. The third aisle, as I call it, is over the one next to the drum circle, which is closer. How long have you been doing this? How long have you been a farmer's marketeer?
We've been in this market for 3 years now.
And have you pretty much been at this spot?
We've actually been in just these front two aisles the whole time. Yeah, we've never been in the back aisle.
And have you kind of heard the drums occasionally?
Oh yeah. I hear it.
Does that bother your business?
It doesn't bother my business at all.
And have you heard more complaints? Have these concerns from your friends been expressed more recently, or are these sort of long-standing concerns?
I think they're long-standing concerns. I have had a couple customers express difficulty passing through the parking lot, just walking through the parking lot without getting bothered or accosted by somebody, but I don't know if it has anything to do with the drum circle or not.
I got you.
Yeah.
Now, the farmers market itself has a governing board, right? Mm-hmm. Have there been any official complaints or concerns registered or expressed from them, as far as you know?
Well, I'm not on the board of directors, so I don't know. I don't really know what they talk about in their board meetings. I can't tell you.
Who the head is? Who's the board person to talk to?
Well, Nate Dillon obviously is the manager, but the board president, I'm not really sure who that is.
Is Nate around here?
Yeah, Nish is here somewhere.
What does he look like?
Oh, you don't know Nish?
I probably do, but I don't, you know, not by name.
He is wearing a Santa Cruz Farmers Market t-shirt.
Okay. Is clean shaven or bearded?
Here he is. In the green t-shirt right there.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, again, we've been talking with
Rebecca.
Thanks, Rebecca. Should be on free radio. We're talking with...
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, it's about the drum circle.
We're talking with a member of the board.
Let me ask you first. So what's your involvement with the drum circle?
I'm covering it for Free Radio.
Do you drum there?
No. But I do give out literature on. I oppose the parking lot law that says you can't be in the parking lot unless you have a car or vehicle, and then only for 15 minutes. I think it's a bad law, and it's being used to disperse other people as well as the drum circle from different areas, so I'm concerned about that. You've been on the board. You were on the board 8-9 years ago when we spoke last.
I actually was on the board. I've been on the board since the beginning. I was on the board. I was one at the table before the market started.
How old is the Wednesday Farmers Market in Santa Cruz?
Let's see. Well, we actually started in 89 with the DTA. We started right after the earthquake, 1990, actually.
And again,
1990.
We're talking with, by the way.
This is Sandra Ward.
And Sandra, Farmers Market has been pretty much been in this place, or it's moved from place to place?
No, we initiated on the Ford's parking lot right there on Cathart and Pacific. So we were there for, if I can remember, maybe as much as 2 years, maybe. Then we moved on Pacific Avenue for 1 year. And then we moved right around here, where we are now at Cedar and Lincoln, for the remainder. So.
Remind me, when you were on Pacific Avenue, what area you occupied, and was it every week and so forth?
Oh, yes. No, the market's been every Wednesday.
So they closed the street for you.
That's right, yeah. And that was like right south end here from Cathart to
Lincoln.
We rounded around Lincoln, so we came down a little bit on Lincoln.
That was like 91 or something, or 92?
92, maybe.
Wow, memory is better than mine. So, I know that you've obviously been reading in the papers probably about the controversy around the drum circle. It's been around for about 10 years now, right?
Maybe even longer. I think it's been around since we've been here, actually.
You're actually in the first aisle.
I'm actually the furthest away from them.
So you're.
And this is a rather interesting interview with Sandra Ward on the board of directors of the Farmers Market. I'm going to actually play the whole thing again. You've listened to 1 or 2 minutes of it. It's about 5 minutes long. Interesting stuff, some history about where the Farmers Market began, how it moved, and how it ended up where it was, and also the fact that they haven't had really much in the way of complaints about the drum circle, at least not in terms of their internal processes or any resolutions they've taken, thus indicating to me that there's a major bogus brouhaha being created by someone somewhere about this in order to, I don't know, to do what is not clear, to socially cleanse the area. Sounds to me like the most likely situation.
Riff-raff, Robert.
You should know about that, Uncle Dennis. Actually, that is Uncle Dennis. He is in the studio, and that's my cue to be hitting the road, riff-raff that I am. He's pointing to his watch, which is probably fast. Although, actually, no, I think that the clock in the studio has just struck 12. Turning into a pumpkin. I want to thank everybody for listening who listened. I encourage people to pay attention to this issue. It's not really about drumming. It's about freedom of assembly. I'll be back to be talking about it some more. We'll be meeting at the Human Rights Organization Saturday in case you want to take some action around this issue. I think they probably will. That's 2 o'clock at the Taqueria Vallarta, actually about a block from the drum circle on Pacific Avenue at Pacific and Cathcart Streets. You can also call me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you've got any reports of any concerns you have or any... if you want to be on the show, things of that sort, again.
Is it about drumming, or is it about bad drumming?
It's about the police wanting to move you along no matter what you're doing, unless you're parking a vehicle or retrieving it. That seems to be the situation. Or walking directly through. Uncle Dennis, however, will be covering some other issues, probably some of his terrorist green friends who are out there claiming to help the environment and to deal with problems, but actually spreading fear and loathing throughout the American community.
Well, we are going to talk about the tree sitters, if that's what you mean.
Yes, the tree sitters, yes. Actually, I got some interesting reports from Berkeley on that and some attacks on trees in People's Park. Apparently they're planning to cut down some of those trees, I've heard. But we'll see about that. And Dennis will talk to you about all those issues whatever issues he's going to talk to you about. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and take it away, Uncle Dennis.
Myself to sleep. rebellion.
Oh, yeah, it's always a good way to start the show. Joe Bonamassa, live on an album called A New Day Yesterday. And what can I say? The guy knows how to play the blues. I am Uncle Dennis. This is From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s. And if you were listening earlier this afternoon to Guess Who's Coming to Dinner with Miss M, you heard her state that I'm going to be playing a whole lot of vinyl tonight, and that is correct. That piece of polycarbonate that you just heard was probably going to be it for the show in terms of CDs, and we are going to go to the rest of this show is going to be all vinyl. And why is that? Well, Uncle Dennis went to the electronics flea market this last Saturday, and I also went to some yard sales and things like that. And picked up a nice thick stack of vinyl. So we are going to work our way through that stack. And of course, coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to open up the brew of the week. And I'm pretty much guaranteed that you folks haven't heard of this brew of the week. I did announce it last week, but you know, if you weren't paying attention, we're going to do it all over again. Of course, 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update. There is way too much news for the Earth First Update, so we're going to wade our way through as much as we can, try to hit the highlights and the most important ones. And, of course, we'll always have more news on the environment down the road. But anyway, and then, of course, at 10 o'clock, we'll have our Spotlight Group of the Week, where we have an entire hour of one group. And not sure who that's going to be, but I have an idea that it might be Brinsley Schwartz. So let's just say it's going to be Brinsley Schwartz. And in case you don't know who Brinsley Schwartz is, well, you're going to find out. Anyway, for right now, we're going to reach all the way over to Turntable 1 and start our vinyl night here on From the Cream to the Dregs with some Tower of Power. Well, that didn't start well. Let's try that again.
Too much.